This is the Schnauzer Logic Radio Company.
And this is Schnauzer Logic episode number 44. It is our one-year anniversary episode, and it's being recorded on Wednesday. It's the 31st of January, 2007.
Groundbreaking, critically acclaimed, smash hits, HBO original series. And now, the HBO original series.
Schnauzer Logic.
Bono and guitarist The Edge are in a plane crash and end up standing in front of God, who is seated on his giant white throne. God asks them each the same question. First, he turns to The Edge. Edge, tell me what you believe in. Edge responds, I believe in Gibson guitars and in the fact that the world would be a much better place if we were still alive to make more U2 records. God tells The Edge to have a seat at his right. Now it's your turn, Bono, says God. What do you believe in? Bono pauses for a moment and then says, I believe you're sitting in my seat.
Clinton, liberals, dittos.
I'm Dr. Mora, and I'm my poodle's mother.
Today on All Things Considered to Death, Moss.
Yeah, baby, show me your...
Sona Vista, my friends! Sona Vista, and welcome! You have managed to tune in, latch on, and otherwise download that stream of bits known around the world for exactly 1 year as Schnauzer Logic. Yes, this is Schnauzer Logic. It is episode number 44 being recorded on Wednesday. It's the 31st of January, 2007, and my name is Robin Goldstein. I'm your host. I'm your buddy. I'm your pal. I'm also a straight white Buddhist vegetarian lesbian fraternity boy trapped in the body of a recovering transsexual woman patent attorney with a bizarre sense of humor and a master's degree in city planning, and I'm thrilled and delighted that each and every one of you is going to be with us for the next 2 hours. We've got a great show for you today. We got great guests for you today. We got great people in the studio for you today. We are thrilled. We can't believe we've made it this far. This is an amazing, amazing milestone. We're going to be talking today with I don't know how to describe this guy. He's a comedian. He's an actor. He's a director. He's a painter. He's a performer of many different models. I think he may have actually been one of the inventors named on the Jarvik Heart, Taylor Negron. And you may be saying to yourself, who? But trust me, when you see the image of Taylor Negron on the webpage or you hear his voice, you're going to know who he is right away. Shortcut. He delivered pizza to Spicoli in Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Oh, yeah, I know that guy. Exactly. So we'll be talking with him today. Also with Jason Nathans, we'll be getting caught up with Jason, who has just spent some more time on the red carpet down in Los Angeles, this time at the SAG Awards, annoying more celebrities and more good stuff. But before we get further, let's punch some buttons down here. We've got people in the studio. We're very excited. Let us say Sona Vista to Sherry Stevens.
Sona Vista,
Robin. Happy anniversary to you.
To you as well.
You belong in a zoo. Now, where were you a year ago? You weren't on the show a year ago.
I wasn't on the show. And I was trying to remember how I got to start coming on a regular basis. I think I was filling in for
probably
somebody and just never stopped.
That's it.
In fact, I think you got an extra mic in there. I even have my own seat now.
You do. You have your own seat, your own headphones, your own microphone.
Everything.
Well, we're thrilled that you're here. You are absolutely a part of the show.
Thank you.
And you cemented your reputation with last week's clothing.
If I could only just get it out a little bit.
The last 30 seconds of last week's program. It was, you know, there's that moment in every performer's career where they sort of like into the cosmos and forever.
That was it for me.
They're a star. When I said, well, what am I going to do if I have brain damage? And you said, you could always work for Earthling. That was it.
And that you could.
And let's say Sona Vista to Sean Meehan.
Sona Vista, my friend.
How are you?
I am good.
Great to see you.
It's great to be here. You mentioned a little riff on the Jarvik Heart. Taken into the Smithsonian.
Is that true?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, this week the Jarvik Heart, the original Jarvik Heart, I'm assuming the one that came out of that dentist, harvested.
Was it Jewish dentist, wasn't it?
I don't know. I don't know. But it is now in the Smithsonian, and if it's in the medical wing of the Smithsonian, I just thought I'd let people know the Smithsonian has a medical museum, like a museum of medical oddities.
Really?
Where I was terrified to see the world's largest human bolus, which is there.
Do we know? Bolus?
Bolus?
It is a giant feces.
Oh.
It is a giant, I'm assuming, impacted feces. It's there for people to enjoy.
How gigantic is that?
It's alarming. It's alarming.
It's a whole box of bran.
It's
with extra raisins.
Oh, they're, you know.
Speaking of bran, let's say a very happy anniversary welcome to our good friend Kip Adana. Michael's Whirling.
Stroke or unload.
Dick Cheney, who's in a lot of trouble now with the Scooter Libby trial. I don't think he'll take this way out, though. We've got our good friend Whitney.
Kiss my ass!
The new fellow, our good buddy, is he Ken from Earthlink.
Yeah,
oh, networking-y.
You stepped on Ken's line.
I'm sorry.
Ken, give it again.
Home networking-y.
And Samuel L. Jackson.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
We got Allie Waller. And, of course, Jerry Seinfeld.
Stop laughing. It's not funny.
Oh, there you go. Where the fuck is Parviz?
I don't know.
He's supposed to be here.
You know, he could be stuck in traffic. There was quite a bit of traffic right around the hospital here.
I know, but you could walk here faster than, I mean...
I don't know where he's coming from, but it was...
In so many ways.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, it's terrific to have you guys here. This is going to be a great first show. And you know what I thought we would do is, I thought what we would do just to get us going here is we would play, we got a little Thanksgiving, I want to keep saying Thanksgiving. I don't know why I want to keep saying Thanksgiving. We got a little anniversary greeting from Ken Turetsky.
Oh, great.
Our new best friend, Ken Turetsky. So I figured this would be a good opportunity to play. That.
Hi, Robin. This is Ken Turetsky. I want to wish Schnauzer Logic a happy first anniversary from all of us here at KenTuretsky.com, which I guess is just me. But, you know, it hardly seems that only a year ago, I didn't know who in the hell you were. But I feel like now you're another tool in my master plan to conquer the entertainment world, and I mean that sincerely. No bullshit. It is bullshit, but I think so highly of your show that I worked up all new bullshit just for you. And now I realize I'm a little late getting back to you on that KSCO appearance, but I did listen, and I've been wondering what kind of comment it is on the state of radio when the sanest person on the air, and I'm talking about both the host and the callers, is the transsexual lesbian with a schlong. I kept waiting for you and Rod Zwirling, whatever the guy's name is, to haul out your Louisville sluggers, just lay them on the table, start whacking out home runs or whatever you do there with your schlong bats. It didn't happen. I guess my point is, please stick with podcasting. It's a much saner world. Radio's full of nut jobs. And besides, if this was regular radio, I couldn't say cocksucker motherfucker. Happy fucking anniversary. Son of East and all that bullshit. All right. Bye.
Yay.
Hey, that was
like
great.
Script, okay. Good. I hope not, because I made it all up on the spot. There was nothing fake show business about that. All right, then. Have a good show. Say hi to everybody. Goodbye.
Nice.
He's our new best friend.
He is.
Well, I love him.
And it's still has that show business varnish, even if he just, even if it was just off the cuff. You know what's nice about a podcast? We're drinking. I don't know if you can hear
true.
This on the mic.
We're celebrating.
But we are celebrating.
Well, but you complained about the plastic cup.
Well,
you come to my house and give you top shelf liquor. You go, I got to drink it out of a plastic cup.
Well, I'm at it. You know, I can expect it at a ballpark or, you know.
This is a ballpark. This is, we're getting ready to hit some schlong home runs. It was such a weird word, you know. He's not the first person that said that to me. Some other people during the week said to me, I mean, I listened to the interview that you did over on KSCO, and I think you handled yourself pretty well, but schlong? Really? Yeah. That's the word that they came up with for this? I don't know. Well, it's listen, it's water under the bridge at this point, because this is our first anniversary.
We're going over 1,000 listeners a week at this point, downloading the show around the world. And I was, and I've been telling people, and they kind of look at me with some, with sort of wild eyes. They go, really? You've been doing it for a year? Because, you know, it's a little bit at a time. Like we told Jason last week when you're writing, you don't write a full year's worth of programs in one night. You write them just an hour at a time, or week, you know, 1 week at a time. And that's what we've been doing here. And as a result, we've gotten lots of nice emails from people around the world over the last year who've listened to the show, and it's made some kind of difference, at least made them giggle during a hard time. And I figure that's God's work. You know, trying to figure out why it is that we're here and why it is that we're doing what we do every week long. And I can't come up with a better reason than to make people laugh every week.
And sometimes we've been the ones giggling in hard times.
Especially us.
Exactly. Well, and it's true. And, you know, we almost didn't have the show today. I think I mentioned to you guys that there was a possibility that the show wasn't going to happen today. I got called for jury duty the other day, which is... you know, it's I don't know, you know, I don't know whether they had that obligation in other countries. It never occurred to me. I mean, not every country has juries, I guess, and I don't know how they choose the pools. It'd be actually something that's worth looking into. But here in the United States, part of your obligation as someone who votes is they call you for jury duty, and I get called every couple of years, I guess. You know, it kind of goes through the roles, and I've never actually gotten to the point where I had to go to the court and sit and go through the whole panel process. And I try to get out of it this time, saying that I've just come off a pretty difficult year. You know, actually, I've come off a difficult 3 years with two significant illnesses, plus the death of my mom, so that financially, my own house is not really very much in order at this point. And losing 2 weeks to a trial would really be deleterious to my own financial health, and it would put my, you know, future earning in jeopardy, whatever it is. And the court was like, too fucking bad. You know, we don't care anymore. You got to come and talk to the judge. And so I figured, all right, I'll go to talk to the judge. So I went down on Monday at around 11 o'clock. You know, that's when they called my group. And you sit there with people. And these are people that have not figured out how to get a jury duty. I mean, that's who this group is. That's always the joke. But I didn't see people like you and I there. I saw a lot of people who did not speak English as a native language, even though being able to speak English fluently is a very important part of being on a jury. They even say so. They write it for you. But I guess if you can't read it, then you wouldn't know. The instructions, you must be able to speak English, are only printed in English. That, I think, is the flaw in that logic. It should be in all the same languages that the ballots are in. And we got impaneled in a room. And here was the weird thing. The trial was a misdemeanor charge of, like, child molestation and harassment. I've never heard of, like, child harassment is what I do to my nephew. And it clearly is. And so I was so surprised to see that this was a misdemeanor charge. So I'm thinking, well, why the fuck was that not pled out? I mean, why do we have a jury and had I gotten on the jury, I would have actually asked that question. And I think that probably would have gotten me off the jury.
You would have gotten off
by asking that question.
They don't want attorneys anyway.
Well, sometimes, you know what? And they may be. So the only thing I came up with is I bet this was a three strikes kind of case. And so they figure if they get convicted of another crime, even a misdemeanor, that's the end of it. So they better go to trial and hopefully they can get off of this one. And I figured, okay, fine. They go through the instructions and they read all of the information about it, and then they see the first 18 people, and they're only going to choose 12. And I figured, I'm gonna get a buy on this. I'm gonna get a pass because they're gonna be able to choose from the first 18 people, 12. It shouldn't be a problem. And as they started to go down the row, almost every man and every woman had some experience, personal or family member, with molestation. They'd either been molested, or their sister had been molested, or they had heard the word molestation, or they were involved in law enforcement tracking down molesters. And when they asked the final question, which is, do you think that this means that you will not be able to be impartial? They all said, no, Your Honor, I'm afraid I will not be able to be impartial. And they just started going through people, and I thought, holy fuck, I'm going to wind up sitting on this jury. Because I'm not going to lie and say that...
You can tell them that you watch SVU.
And it's very upsetting sometimes.
I get so upset afterwards.
It was very weird, and I thought, holy shit, I'm going to wind up being fucking impaneled on this jury, you know, because I don't really have a good legitimate excuse about why I can't... I unfortunately haven't been the victim of any molestation, and I don't have any of my family that's been in the victim of molestation, and...
But I was amazed at the prevalence. Now, somebody said to me, well, this is just bullshit because it's hard to check on people and you don't want to embarrass them by asking the questions. But my experience in talking to other people is they go, oh, yeah, I can't tell you the number of people that I know, mostly women, but, you know, men as well, who've been the victims of molestation. And my question sort of is, what part of natural selection makes that a dominant characteristic for males, mostly males, to prey on the younger members of society in a sexual way, both male and female? Where the fuck does that come from?
I don't know. But that wouldn't have been my question. My question would have been, yeah, it's amazing how many Catholics I know. You know?
Do you have that experience in your own world?
Personally? I do. I mean, I do know
I'm not
friends.
Asking you to drop names or anything
But I do have friends that have been victims or have had a child who has been a victim.
The numbers seem to be...
It is unbelievable.
Extraordinary. Maybe 20%? Could it be like 1 out of 5?
Yeah.
I think it's very possible.
Well, that's... Why are we not talking about that as a national... Is this only Americans? Is this around the world?
Well, that was the other thing I was thinking is, you know, it feels like it's an American phenomenon. Having spent some time in France, and maybe they just don't talk about it in Europe as much as we talk about it here. And, you know, laws are different and people are brought to trial much more quickly because the laws have been changed to be intolerant of this. But it does make you wonder.
As opposed to
20 years ago, I mean, laws have changed. And with, you know, so much of this being more prevalent, women are less shy about bringing it to someone's attention.
And that's a good thing.
Yeah.
That's a good thing. So you think that the law has helped people feel more confident about coming forward?
You bet.
That could be.
And SVU, you know.
Yeah. God bless Sam Waterston.
Yes.
Not actually in that one, but doesn't matter.
I think it should just be blessed.
I think so, too. But I was astounded to see that was what this case was about. This was not a property crime. This was, you know, just another. And the judge wasn't blinking an eye. It wasn't that the judge or the prosecutor were going, oh, come on. Or, you know, like there wasn't even that kind of. I'm sure they hear this all the time. If this is the kind of cases that she's prosecuting, she must hear this on a daily basis. And this is no way to start the anniversary show.
I was just going to say, this isn't.
All right, it's bumming out. You're playing Parvise's role today. Okay.
Wait, let me move over to his.
In the role of Parvise will be Sherry Stevens, who will be like, I'm bored. All right, here's what we'll do.
Robin.
Take a break. All right, so we'll take a break. I don't know where Parvise is. We'll come back. We'll be talking with.
I have a plumbing update.
We'll give you frequent Parvise updates through the show. We still don't know where he is.
Anyhow, what ultimately wound up happening was I came home and one of my own private clients who was going to Demo down in San Diego. Do you know Demo? This is an annual event where they sort of show like 60 of the newest technologies and it's like a juried thing to get into Demo. One of my clients is in Demo with their new technology, this new business that's cool. Getting rolled out. And so I think they're going to be a demo starting today. So they decided yesterday they needed a patent filed. Yesterday. Filed. And so,
with drawings.
Well, they basically got me to sort of wrap my name around it. And of course, I'm responsible because I've signed off on this. It's you know, this is effectively, I'm verifying that this is a legitimate document. I'm not examining it, but... And so I got this thing at about midnight on Monday night going into Tuesday, and I thought, I don't have any fucking time to work on this. So I call the court on Monday morning at 8 a.m., and I figured, I'm going to play the health card. I'm not going to play the I got a client card because that's going to be, you know, nobody wants to deal with that. But I'm going to play the health card, which is I've got a brain tumor and I have to go have brain surgery. And if they've listened to the show, they'd go, it's not such a big deal. But or if they talk to my sister, they'd feel the same way. But because they don't, I'll use the words. And she says to me, well, I'm sorry, but you've already been assigned to a judge. You have to be here. And I said, I can't be here. I have things I need to do at this point. And she goes, well, I'm sorry. You need to be here. They won't start the trial unless you're there. And this is when I realized that this is what makes me mad. And I said, no, that can't be right.
Well, don't they have backup jurors?
Well, they didn't even start the trial yet. They're just going through the voir dire. And I said to her, I said, wait a second. I said, if, God forbid, I was in a car accident last night and I was now in a coma over at Good Sam Hospital, and a family member called you to say that Robin's not going to be able to be at court today because she's in a coma, would you say, well, I'm sorry, but we're not moving forward with this trial until she gets here? I said, that just doesn't make any sense. I don't know if that's, because that's not Socratic. That's just reductio absurdum. But I said, that doesn't make any sense. There must be some way to deal with this. You better be here or we're going to issue a bench warrant for your arrest. That's what they said.
Wow.
Yeah. So I thought, okay, great. This is a nice way for me to be introduced to the other side of the criminal justice system. Thank you very much. I'm coming to you with something reasonable. And so I had to, in like 10 minutes, get washed and dressed and put on a court clothing because I knew I have to go before the judge now. So now I actually had to look like a lawyer and put on something that I wouldn't wear every day, which is very nice kind of business attire, so that I could get, and ultimately I went before the judge, and I was called into court privately in front of the judge and the lawyers, and asked to explain why I needed to be excused, and I explained that I had just found out that I had been scheduled for brain surgery, which was a little white lie because I knew about it, but I figured maybe I could serve for a day. You know, I want to do my duty. Plus, if I'm on the jury, if I ever am charged with a crime, I want me on the jury.
Absolutely.
I don't want the guy that, you know, said, do you understand what I've been saying to you this entire time? Can you repeat it back? Yes. You know, I was like, I don't want that guy on the jury.
No.
I want me. I want you. I want you. I don't want you off the jury.
You don't want 12 vacant men. Which was a terrible play and not much better of a film.
No, I want me on the jury. I want you on the jury. And I want all the people that want to get off on that fucking jury. And I realized when I was sitting there that if I had been either the prosecution or the defense, I wouldn't have let me go. I would have been hands on my ankles. I mean, they would have actually sequestered just me just to make sure I couldn't get out of this. So I, you know, went in front of the judge, and the judge said, okay, we understand. I've conferred with counsel, and they've agreed to release you. And I thought,
wow.
Holy shit. And at that moment, I understand why people live off the grid. They don't want to get wrapped, because it's so easy to get wrapped up in this process. And, you know, in business, there's rationality. But there's no rationality. It's a whole dominion to itself. It's like the government. It is. It's the government with the ability to hit you with a baton. Kind of like an angry band leader. You know what that means. All right, I'm done killing time. Fuck Parvies. We're going to move forward with the show. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We'll be talking with Taylor Negron. All the music today are songs that have been used in Apple iPod commercials.
Cool.
Because as I was listening to the latest Apple iPod commercial of the day, and I'm looking it up online so that I could order it, I thought, you know, these are all catchy tunes. I think we have like at least 6 of them that I like enough to be able to play on the show. So that's what all the songs are today. So
and we'll do you know the shuffle has now come out in colors?
Yes. Just how exciting. Have another drink.
I'm still working on this one.
All right. You're listening to Schnauzer Logic. Robin Goldstein, Sean Meehan, Sherry Stevens, Parvies Fatale, and Absentia. When we be coming back, we'll be talking with Taylor Negron. And we're very excited about that. So we're going to invite you to please stick around.
Sometimes. This is Schnauzer Logic.
Well, just because she feeds me well, and she made me talk to her in a pink hotel. Examine these guys for me. She might just want my bones, you see. And if I hit, don't you get me? She's the second best killer I ever have seen. It don't come much more sick than you. You killed me twice. Saw you one time in the back of the club. Threw it on glass and the ticket stubs. Said I heard you kid the boy till he bled. And your student said, oh my god, till she said, ba-da-ba-ba-da, ba-da-ba-da-ba-da.
and got a kicking instead. Till she said,
flushing the toilet while your spouse is in the shower.
Oh, sorry.
Schnauzer Logic.
Welcome back. We're about 34 minutes into this hour of Schnauzer Logic. It is our big first one-year anniversary episode. Robin Goldstein, host buddy and pal, straight white Buddhist vegetarian lesbian fraternity boy trapped in the body of a recovering transsexual woman patent attorney with a bizarre sense of humor and a master's degree in city planning. www.schnauzerlogic.com. Robin@schnauzerlogic.com. We're over on myspace.com/schnauzerlogic, and we've got a phone number for you to leave your comments at area code 206-666-6540. We were talking during the break about our guest today, and I said, welcome back in Sona Vista to Sean Meehan, Sona Vista.
Sona Vista.
And Sherry Stevens, Sona Vista.
Sona Vista.
What I said during the break was I don't know how to introduce him. Like, I don't know where to start. There's so much here that it feels like going down any particular path will sort of leave out all the other things that I want to talk about as well. Taylor Negron he's a writer. He's an actor, a performer, a director. He's apparently an artist. He's some kind of inventor of note. I think he's been nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize three times.
Renaissance man.
That may be the right way to put it. And he's funny. He's a comedian as well, which sort of encompasses all of those things. And so rather than try to spend the rest of the interview explaining who he is, let me just let him come on the line and explain himself. Ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together for Mr. Taylor Negron.
Thank you very much. What a nice introduction.
Thank you.
Well, I think the best way for you to appreciate me is maybe just enjoy one of my pear tarts. Because, you know, I have the same birthday as Martha Stewart, so, you know, that's what's going on there.
Wow.
We did not know that.
The stars were aligned for greatness that day.
At 450 degrees.
I like to refer to her as prisoner 8849.
So you're personal friends is what you're saying.
No, but she's in my dreams a lot. Sometimes she's always, she's really in my dreams. She's always, you know, kind of like helping me with my centerpiece.
Is that right?
No, it's really bizarre because I have the same birthday as her. So someday she's in my... I guess she has a level of excellence that I like because she's a teacher. And I've always been such a bad student, so it works out really, really good.
Speaking of a level of excellence, I mean, your website, I think, is an instant image into a kind of excellence. I sent the website over to both Sean and Sherry before the show so they could have an opportunity to kind of get some background, and both of them have the same comment, which is, this is, number one, this is easy to navigate. Number two, this is beautiful and full of really incredible stuff. The fact that you're putting a lot of time into a web presence, I think you're clearly somebody that cares a lot about detail, but How do you focus on art versus performing versus directing versus writing? Or do you not worry about that question?
Well, I think that sometimes, you know, you have to kind of like know that it all goes, it ends, it's not where you start, it's where you finish. So, you know, like when I direct something or I write something, I see a visual picture. So it's like if I have a very good eye for things, so I could see this is going to be a play about, you know, the pair, but the pair is going to be in front and the back is going to be a person, but the pair always has to be in front. It's a very esoteric way of thinking about it, but I do think it all kind of serves the same purpose. Now I'm at the point now where I go, one day is for writing, the next day is for painting.
So that's how you kind of go through, because we have lots of friends who are creative and they're not sure how to split up that time. And that, I think for someone who's creative, that may be the most difficult part, is partitioning your time, because otherwise you can get wedged in the process. Now, you are our guest today because of our mutual friend, Jan Karam, who we love dearly, who's been on the
we
show many,
Jan
many,
Karam, yeah.
many, many times. And Jan is a talented performer as well. And she said that she ran into you, I guess, about a week ago at the Sit and Spin down in Los Angeles, where you were doing a reading of some of your work. And I know that you're a prolific writer as well, not only for your own material, but in magazines and what have you?
Yes, yes, yes. I wrote this piece that was really interesting. I had so much anger at this Buddhist.
Might as well go big.
my mother said, you know, you really are in trouble because I've never heard you so mad. You need to write this in show business. And out of it, I got my own, you know, coloring book and drapes and bedspread.
in lieu of payment.
And it was such a heady experience for a kid, you know, to be in a thermos when everybody else is drinking out of you, you know, when you're like in the ninth grade.
Sure.
But that was my first job. And then I decided, you know, because I loved painting so much, I was always a painter and I got scholarships. So I was discovered as a model by the Hanna-Barbera people. And then I decided, oh, that's a good money in show business. I might as well be an extra. So then I was an extra because it was good for me to draw because the people were still. And I thought, wow, you get paid $50 a day and you get to, you know, draw these people. And they were so interesting, those extras. And then I was in that movie, The Main Event, with Barbara Streisand, and they kind of picked me out of the crowd and said, go next to Barbara. And then, you know, and then I actually learned the Hollywood smooth, which is I got off the movie saying, you know, I just did a movie with Barbara Streisand. And so then after that, it was like, it actually was like smooth sailing, and I kind of schmoozed my way into a series very young.
And you've been working constantly. I mean, you're fortunate because I'm sure you know hundreds of people who are talented who have not been able to turn this into a career and who are still struggling as they go along the way. And when you
yeah, but they weren't that talented.
I stand corrected.
They made the mistake of having been in The Main Event and schmoozing by saying, you know, I was in a film with Ryan O'Neal. They got nowhere.
No, I mean that in a really true way, though. I mean, it's like you not only do you have to have talent to be great, but you have to be talented to persevere. You know, the talent to have courage and the talent to, like, withstand it, you know? I mean, a lot, and the talent to, like, not get into a bad marriage.
And I think I think that's very astute, because I over the course of the show, we've talked to a lot of folks who are incredibly talented performers from an artistic point of view, but have not been able to find a way to make it work for them financially, and they continue to perform because it satisfies their soul and their audience. But you did have something from the beginning. Was that something that you think is born into you? Again, has that come from your mom? What is it that provides that drive to continue, not just the creativity, but sort of the single visionness of it?
Well, I think that you realize that there is a need for you, or a need for your work. And when you know that there's a need for it, I mean, I really mean this, I don't know whether it's humbly or arrogantly, but I think that I provide something in the world that's necessary, which is kind of, I'm real, I have a level of excellence, I'm kind, I'm not hateful, at least not when I'm in public. But I mean,
that's Buddhists, though. That's another matter.
That's another matter. But when people see my performances, I think they see a great humanity, and I think it's important that humanity has humanity. And I know when I do my work, I always try to sneak in like a the good word, and I think the good word is needed right now, you know, very much in this world. So I always felt like that's, I wanted to provide like an alternative, even though when I look back at my work, I didn't know I was alternative, but I guess I really was. Saying the things that I was saying, like, you know, strange kind of sexually ambiguous things before it was fashionable.
And I remember seeing you. I remember seeing you do stand up, and thinking that you were not like all of the other comedians of the day, especially back in the 80s when everyone was doing everyone else's material and they all sounded the same. You were unique. You did stand out, but you didn't. I don't know. I mean, I guess I think of you as a comedian, but not necessarily as a stand up. Did you sort of see yourself as moving through that as a phase?
No, because I still do stand up. I do it constantly. I never neglected it. I love it. And I never stopped doing it. I just never bought into the fact that it's something that's like rock and roll. You know, I never wanted to perform in front of 2,000 people. Because I think that stand-up is like jazz, you know, it has to be done very intimately, it has an astrological sign, it's a very sexy, very tiny little thing, and it's a rare thing. So that's why I never pursued it to perform in the big venue. I absolutely perform it, you know, all the time, and you know, around the United States, but in smaller places, and I really don't even promote myself, except for this year I'm going to go out and promote it when I start doing readings from the book and stuff.
Right. And there is a sort of when you look at the alternative comedy space, it's I think more forgiving in terms of different ways of being on a stage, and so there is a kind of performance art quality to it, and that encompasses things like readings as well as sort of telling jokes, et cetera, et cetera. So I didn't mean that disrespectfully along the way, but I don't think of you as being, you know, a Carrot Top, for example.
Can I sit on your lap? my God. Yeah. But
I used to have to take him to tennis class in an old limo.
it was a step above being an escort.
Or was it?
Robin Williams used to do this thing where he said that he saw Mitzi like in the stall of the boys' bathroom at the Comedy Store. She was laying down there, and he thought she was dead. And he goes, "What are you doing?" And she goes, "I'm washing my hair."
Has there ever been a love-hate relationship with a sort of comedy impresario, the way people just, they go on and on and on? Regular listeners of this show know that back at the beginning of the show, about a year ago, we got a chance to finish an interview that I had done with Kip Adada about 6 years ago that did not go very well. I don't know if you know. You know Kip? Do you know?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, and Kip. Kip was the only person that actually ever hung up on me many, many years ago, but he was kind enough to finish it. We had a really interesting interview, and Kip had some fascinating stories to tell about Mitzi, and he kind of went on, and I thought, you're just one of the few people who's willing to say it out loud. My sense is that's a whole other scene. There's probably a movie there. Now, you're actually, you told me that you're in the process of working on some new projects now.
Yes. I have a play that I just wrote that's being developed off-Broadway called La Canard Gris, which is a two-act kind of comedy drama about yoga. It was originally called Yoga Bitch. And it's a lovely play that I've worked on for quite a long time. And, you know, I write these little plays that are just great, and they're terrific. I have this collection of stories that have been put together in a book called Remade as Fiction. That's coming out. I'm such a perfectionist that I want to integrate it with the art, and it's hard to just get that. It's very expensive to have those two things together, pictures and words, unless you go to China, and I refuse to go to China. I don't want to give my money to China. It's very strange. I think America cannot pull that off. It's you guys, are you all Chinese?
No, I...
No, this broadcast from China. In China.
Didn't they tell you?
Too bad Parviz is not
That's
here.
That's right. Ding, 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 ding,
ding, ding. Yeah. Oh, you be Peking nice. I'm sorry, see, that's not... It's politically... You know the piece that I wrote the other night that Jan heard me say was basically about no. This is another thing I'm working on right now. Now I'm racially profiling people.
Yeah, you'd mentioned that when we talked earlier today.
Yeah, about when they come to my house to do work, like I just because I live in
Beverly Hills, and the people who come are like Persians and or Russians who have this collapsed Bolshevik energy. And I'm all of a sudden I'm like Nicholas II, you know, I'm like, you're gonna come back and shoot me. I know. It's just like and you know, writing about that is, you know, it's just interesting. I saw Carrie Fisher's show. It was so brilliant. But it's like so funny that, you know, you live in a world where your plumber could compare you to Carrie Fisher.
Yeah. And
vice versa.
Yeah. Is that pre or post Paul Simon Carrie Fisher? Because
Yeah. Yeah, the only thing worse is that somebody comes in and goes, you know, you act exactly like Debbie Reynolds.
Wait, were they talking to you?
Yeah, I'm like, good morning, good morning.
Well, it is great to stay up late.
But it's an interesting process when you're kind of like aware. I mean, somebody a long time ago told me that if you really want to be a success in life, you have to give up newspapers and magazines. And I did that. And consequently, it's like whenever I have nothing to do, I just pick up a book and I read it. So like today I was reading all about Nathaniel West. His real name is Nathan Weisenstein. You know, it's like nobody knows, and you hear, you know, you lift up the blanket on American culture. It's so what we have is so interesting, but America really has to just like put down the Angelina Jolie.
That's hard to do when you're a red-blooded kind of, you know, short attention span, shiny things that burn heterosexual guy. It's just it's hard to let her go to determine what Nathaniel West's real last name.
Shut up. Shut up. You know what? I'm gonna come over there now. No. What I meant to say was, you know, Kevin Federline.
Oh yeah,
he's gone.
America's already put him down.
You know, America's fascination with all that. I can't believe it. You hit me with that, Nathaniel West. You see, that's my whole life right there in a nutshell. It's like, Taylor, nobody's going to care that Nathaniel West's real name is Nathan Weisenstein. It's very upsetting.
Well, but it means that your mind is working at multiple levels simultaneously, and that's where you draw upon from creativity, for humor, from your observations, from your writing, from your directing. That's something that we used to celebrate. As a matter of fact, and we've sort of moved away from that. I think we're. Why do you
think that happened?
Personally,
my
feeling is that we have substituted capitalism for a kind of social system, and capitalism, in my point of view, is an interesting economic system that helps motivate certain kinds of production, but it isn't a substitute for social interaction between people, and we've confused the two of them.
I also think that kind of, you know, you're talking about the cross-pollination of all kinds of different, seemingly disparate endeavors. And I think that's harder to commodify than, you know, ow, my balls. You know, that's America's funniest home accidents is not something, that's something easily commodified, and I think that this sort of multi-layered, cross-pollinated thoughtfulness is a little harder to find an audience for. I think it's more difficult. And that's part of the consumer culture.
Right.
No, you're right. Very well put. I mean, when you think about the number one movie right now is, what is it, like Scary Movie 19 or something.
Right. Right, and before that, it was Night at the Museum, and you know, it was certainly an entertaining piece of fluff. But when they do the Independent Spirit Awards, we were talking about this in the show a few weeks ago. I like to watch the Independent Spirit Awards because those are all the films that I never heard about that I'm pretty sure I'm going to like because there's some thought that goes into the process as opposed to all of the big budget Hollywood fluff that can be a confection, but it's not going to get me to think about very much along the way. Do you find that you've been in a people can go to your website, by the way. I should give it a plug at the very least. It is www.taylornegron.com. We'll put a link on our website, schnauzerlogic.com.
Yes, and if anybody wants to reach me directly, they can go to the real Taylor Negron at MySpace.
So what the hell happened there? Well, you've had your ID hijacked. Taylor Negron has been hijacked, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, I was wondering why it was such a slow year. Yes, it was very interesting. It got me really, really upset. So much upset because I thought, here is a guy that's, or a girl. At first I thought it was an African-American woman called LaCrissa, who just... Because a lot of my fans are like insane black women, and I thought a black, one of these crazy black women did this, or a midget.
And it was one of those damn midget Buddhists.
Well, here's what happened: is that they took Taylor Negron, they're presenting. He has 977 friends, which are 954 friends more than I have. And. He put this identity out there. It's all me, but he got the facts all a little bit muddled, so it's not really real. And he's corresponding with my friends.
Your real friends or just new friends?
They all think it's him.
People would come up and they go, Taylor, I wrote you that email and you never answered me back, and you answered me back twice, and then you just stopped. I go, what are you talking about?
And have you not been able to get MySpace to deal with this for you?
Well, I mean, no, because you know what? I finally got so upset, I did like a Mommy Dearest on them, where I literally called them up and I said, I am a Taylor Negron, I'm a comic, I'm going on the Tonight Show with Jay Leno, and I'm going to publicly come out against your product. And they never called me back.
You know, I think it may be Dane Cook who did it. I think he's trying to keep down the competition.
Yeah, because I have more musculature in my upper arm.
And he's trying to spread his globalist pro-China trade message.
Exactly. Well, yeah.
By the way, just one of curiosity, did you actually see the contract that Dane Cook signed with the devil? I'm trying to find somebody that's seen that piece of paper.
Is he funny?
And we'll be back right after this.
Because I saw him on, I've never met him, I don't know from him, and then I saw him on TV the other day, and I was like, there was no one in my house, and I was like asking the lamp, is that Dane Cook? Because he wasn't funny, he was strange and kind of nerve-wracking.
And strangely enough, the lamp knew. Yes, that's Dane Cook.
The lamp thinks that he stole his material. That's the thing about Taylor. His lamp
is
funny.
Well, you know what? The lamp rolled its eyes. Which turned the 60 into a 25. what was I saying before but Dane Cook about... Well, anyway, we can't go back.
We were talking about your MySpace and how your ID had been hijacked.
So, of course, thank you. The MySpace thing was that I went on as the real Taylor Negron, and I put this rather stern picture of me reading it with my glasses on at a lectern. It said, person you'd most like to meet, and I wrote, the person who stole my identity on MySpace. So all of a sudden, you know, like, this is all new to me. And so I'm, you know, their friends are requesting to be my friends and everything. And then I get a request from Taylor Negron to be my friend.
And what did your therapist think about that?
I know. Well, I was like, you know, it was like kind of like the twin fantasy. You know, it was like, I'd like to have sex with that Taylor Negron. So I
should have responded, I already do.
I gave him some of the pear tart that I made, nude. He said, oh, you probably are very mad at me and for what I've done to you and that that I'm an imposter. So, of course, I'm Mr. Nice Guy, and I wrote back, and I go, absolutely not. I think it's great. We have to work this thing out, the custody battle of Taylor Negron's name. And this is going to be the official fan site. And, like, I don't want a fan site. I don't need a fan site. So I said, why don't you come to lunch next week, and I'll take you to the Polo Lounge, and we can discuss it. And then he sent me, like, he sent me three emails that I'm really afraid to read them because I'm afraid I'm going to faint and cut myself.
You know, I kind of need a fan site. So just for my ego, it's kind of been flagging lately. So if you can just tell him...
It's insane. He goes, and then he's like saying, now it says that the Taylor Negron site is going to become perhaps the official fan site. Who am I? Like, you know, Tyrone Power?
maybe they think it's your cousin Chuck.
I know. And look at his fan site. You know, it's like, you know, people who mourn the death of Mama Cat.
Yeah.
No, I love him. My whole family, come on, it's insane. His fan site and my fan site are the only ones that have the direct link to the show Intervention. My mom is so funny. Whenever, like, you know, like, somebody in our family fucks up and goes to prison or is on television for some drug abuse thing, because a lot of our family has ended up in the penitentiary, and a lot of my cousins married badly. So whenever I go, God, I feel so bad for Yvonne, and then my mom goes, well, you know, she really isn't your cousin. And I go, Mom, why did we have to buy her a present for the last 36 years of Christmas?
Let's get down to brass tacks. I've spent money. She damn well better be my cousin.
Do we get any of that stuff back?
I want to talk a little bit about the artwork on your website, because it's pretty amazing. It's spectacular.
It's really, really,
I mean, you
beautiful.
Could have gone in that direction all by itself, I think. Have you pursued this? Have you had an opportunity to have shows of your work along the way?
Well, you know what? You're very, very nice to hear that. That just, when I hear that, I just am so touched, because I really have never put it out there. And this is, the website has allowed me to kind of sneak it on there without it having to be real. But yes, I have never neglected my art. I have, you know, hundreds of drawings and paintings. I do it, and I go to class. You know, I'm still in class. I'm in a great class right now. I'm learning Flemish painting, this glazing technique that's really beautiful. And they asked me to do a show, and I'm doing a show in this beautiful restaurant in Silver Lake in next month of 15 drawings, you know, and they're very excited to have it. It's a really big deal, you know. I've never done it, because it's very psychologically strange, you know, because each little drawing and painting I can't let go of. It's very weird.
Yeah, it's different than performing. I think creating something in three dimensions is very different than performing, which is much more ephemeral. We do the show, you do your show, and it's out there and it's gone into the ether. But when you put something down on paper, or I think, and even that has an ephemeral quality to it, because we pass so many words a day that it doesn't impact us in the same way. But I think the visual medium gets into a different part of our brain, and it connects emotionally with people in a very different way. And on the one hand, I think we're more vulnerable that way, but on the other hand, there's a lot more power that comes along with that vulnerability.
I feel very responsible for my illustrative work in a way that I don't feel very responsible for my written work.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I do professionally, and so it's uncomfortable.
Is Norman Rockwell in the room suddenly? I mean,
no, Sean. We all have other things that we do. We all have other square jobs, because you know.
I mean, I went to the Academy of Art in San Francisco into Art Center to be an illustrator.
Okay.
I mean, I ended up going into the movie business because it was more quick money. Because illustration, that's like, and that was very rigid. I mean, like, you know, the whole racket, you know, they give you the Tide soap and you have to draw Tide. But, no, it's been really interesting, you know, recently going to shows. I just went to the Magritte show here in Los Angeles, and, you know, to become an excellent painter, but also see something. My gift is that I'm able to capture essence of people.
That was the show where they had other artists in addition to Magritte sort of doing their representation.
Yeah, it was curated really strangely, but it was a total success.
That was fascinating. Yes.
That's what was so fascinating, too, is that no matter who was with him, next to him, nobody was better than him. His draftsmanship, his painterly vision of life. I mean, he was very talented. He could paint anything, and he painted these Dada surreal things. I actually saw the last Magritte available on the market at the LA Art Show on Sunday, and it's $8 million, and it's this insane picture from 1941 of a woman walking hand in hand with a nude woman down the street in Paris. And what it is him drawing a woman before she gets up and she puts on her makeup, that we all walk around with, kind of like the dirty, just woken up person next to us. It's like me walking around with the fake Taylor Negron. on a very short leash.
So, moving forward, I mean, I don't know if you're, are you, do you think about sort of moving into act two of your life at this point from a creative point of view? Your website mentioned?
Yeah. It's very interesting, act two, because in Hollywood, you know, they're only concerned with act one.
Right.
And then all of a sudden you turn around and, you know, 30 years has gone by since I did the main event, or more, you know. My phone is blinking. If it should go out, my God, the interview's going to be over. Don't think I hang up with you. I can't believe this stupid thing.
But that seemed perfect.
We have time. Yeah, you know what? I did a bunch of movies, a little independent movies that are coming out that are rather sweet, and you see me in the way I am now, which is more still. And I think that let Dane Cook be Dane Cook. I kind of when I play parts now where I'm a little bit more still and a little bit more in control and kind of like an older, which is interesting because a lot of people are very scared to be old, and I really welcome it because I think the older people that I remember were always the nicest and the gentlest and the ones that would listen to you.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm glad that I get to kind of play that. And this one movie I did called Channels that I just saw, it was very weird to see because I deliberately was still and kind of watched everything. So now I get to, you know, and I hope that people are going to like that. I think that sometimes people don't want to let go of what they think you are. They still want me to be like what I was in the 80s or something, you know, like it's a problem for everybody.
And obviously, that's something that's there, and you mentioned in one of your sites that people still today come up to you from the early roles that they recognize you from, and I'm sure that that's flattering along the way, but we're interested in how artists continue to grow, and you've given us just the tiniest glimpse, and thank you so very much.
Well, thank you so much. My God, you guys are so smart and kind. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, what it is being an artist, you have to take it like hour by hour, because I think that artists and people who know who they are very sensitive, and some hours are better than the next.
You hear that, audience?
We caught you on what sounds like a very good hour, and I'm very appreciative for the
thank
time.
Thank you so much. Will you email me any links to you guys so I could write you a proper thank you note and keep you up to date of what's going on?
Oh, God, absolutely. Oh, sure. Once the show is up online, we'll let you know where that is and when your interview starts in the show so you can have clips to the whole thing. And
yeah,
we'll
and as you guys kind of go up in the world when you replace Diane Sawyer, you know. But I love your introduction of Robin. I mean, she's another Renaissance man.
Yes, I am.
Quite true.
My God. That was so great that you could talk that fast.
Years and years of therapy and practice. Thank you, Taylor.
You guys sound so great. Thank you so much for letting me be a guest.
Thank you. We had a great time. Thanks for your time today, and good luck.
Okay, good.
We'll talk to you again. Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right.
TaylorNegron.com, and of course, the real Taylor Negron.
MySpace. Outstanding. That was a big time, big deal guest for our first anniversary.
That was great. Great.
Yeah. We could go on and on and on and on.
I am so amazed. I really would invite people to go to his website because it is a beautiful website, and it's hard to believe that the guy has not used his art skills as a revenue stream. Right. I mean, I hate to be so crass about it, but he's good.
He's really good, and it's, you know, and he does capture the essence of people. That's what I was just so impressed with.
But you know, you go to IMDb and you see that he's constantly working.
Yeah.
In little films and, you know, quick throwaway kind of things and some big stuff too. Obviously, big things along the way, but sorry, he's always working. He's got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 films now that are completed and in post-production. That's a lot. That's a lot of work, right? And so I think it must be an easy way to, you know, sort of supplement your income so that you can do these other things and not worry about making money as an artist or an illustrator.
Or a writer, or poet, or any of those things, which
becomes much more difficult. So they become labors of love along the way. And hopefully your mom is smart. I need to see whether she's willing to take on a new client.
One of the things you said, though, and I really think this gets down to it, and I think that this will resonate with a lot of the creative people in our audience, because I know you're all creative, but how do you divide your time, you know, amongst these various different creative endeavors? The answer usually is, I spend the most time on the thing that pays, and everything else has to go by the wayside.
Right.
And he's found a way to make sure that everything gets its due, which I think is something that we all long for and we all admire.
Right.
And want to emulate.
Yeah, yeah. All right, here's what we're going to do. We'll take another break at this point, and when we come back, I think we'll be talking with Jason Nathanson, and we'll get caught up on the whole SAG red carpet thing. How's that sound?
Sounds good.
Sounds very good.
Sean's already in the other room.
Well, I had a leg cramp.
Bends. He's got the bends. By the way, coming up in future weeks, for people who are interested, I think next week we're going to have Rich Tallarico. Rich is he's a veteran of Second City, also wrote for Saturday Night Live. He's been involved in a number of projects on Comedy Central, and he is going to be, I think, writing and filming his own film in Chicago starting soon. So Rich is going to be on the show. And John DeCoven managed to hook us up with Bobby Slayton.
That's great.
You
good old
are
John.
Kidding.
No. And so what's so cool is Jan Karam, who we all agree that we love dearly, Jan had said to me, do you want to talk to, and I thought she said Bobby Slayton, it's Bobby Kelton. And so I mistook it. And so by going off on the wrong path,
We got
both Bobby Slayton yeah. and Bobby Kelton.
Cool.
So we get both of them, maybe the same week. I'm thinking death match.
Well, I think there's going to be one because Bobby Kelton took Bobby Slayton at MySpace. And I think there's some bad blood.
It's the real Bobby Slayton. So that's what we got coming up in future weeks, plus some other surprise guests. So there you go. All right, we're going to take another break. We'll play some more tunage. You're listening to Schnauzer Logic, Robin Goldstein, Sean Meehan, Sherry Stevens, Parviz Vitali is a fuck. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And we're all inviting you to please stick around.
I think you're a refreshing gay boy.
Schnauzer Logic.
Teaching me how. Your love is teaching me.
universe from the top of the Empire State Building.
Actually, it's a second bedroom with some bath mats taped to the wall.
And broadcasting loud to all time zones around the world in stereo.
It's a medium bitrate podcast. Oh, and it's mono.
This is
Schnauzer Logic!
Welcome back. We're about an hour or so into this episode of Schnauzer Logic. Robin Goldstein, straight white booze, vegetarian lesbian fraternity boy trapped in the body of a recovering transsexual woman, bad attorney with a bizarre sense of humor and a master's degree in city planning. www.schnauzerlogic.com. Here on our first anniversary show, 1 year. Let me turn the mic on here. Hold on.
Woohoo!
All right. Alcohol does make the show better.
Oh, yes, it does.
On both ends of the microphone.
Then I'm showing my titties. So it's...
Woohoo! I'm going to show mine.
Taylor is great.
He's not helping us along with that.
Taylor was great.
He really was. He was terrific.
I always love how people get all screwed up with the whole pronoun thing, though, with the he and the she. Yeah. Because when I call him on the phone during the week to do this, like, hi, this is Robin Goldstein. And, you know, so it's a different voice and a different thing. It's like, hey, Robin Goldstein, www.schnauzerlogic.com. Most people, though, aren't thrown off by that stuff. So it's cool. But I've said it before, and I mean it. One of the things that keeps me going, I'm going to be 50 this year, which is
yeah, you are.
I'm going to be 50 this year, right? We're now in 2007, so I'm going to be 50. So depending upon how you look at it, I have somewhere between 6 months and another 50 years to live.
Okay.
And so I think you get to a point in your life where you think, okay, well, what is it that I'm trying to accomplish? You know, why do I keep getting up every morning and washing under both arms? You know, in sort of not going down that path. And especially, and everybody has challenges in their life that they face along the way. I mean, in this room, we've all had serious medical challenges. You've had cancer.
I have.
I've had cancer. You've dealt with some debilitating kidney disease.
Yeah.
Still dealing with it.
Right.
Right? And so it you know, it's not like we're, and yet I think of the folks that I know, these are, you know, among us, we are three creative, life-affirming, funny, genuinely funny people. And along the way, what I realized was one of the things that's of interest to me is the world is populated by talented and creative people that I haven't yet had a chance to meet. And so I keep getting up every morning because I'm going to meet someone else that's going to be talented and creative, and I don't already know about them, and I don't know their work, and I don't know their art, and I don't know their life, and they haven't taught me something or made me laugh or made me think or made me angry or something like that. And so the point of the shows that we do, because we've been doing Schnauzer Logic in one form or another now for, I think, about 6 years, 6 or 7 years it's been on the air. Either here, KSCO, and various podcasts, Shoutcast, streams, all over the world. And I realized that the show has kind of changed form. There was a period of time where I thought, what I really want to do is I want to be the next Howard Stern. I want to be the next Opie and Anthony. And it's not to say that I don't want that kind of national exposure, because quite frankly, that kind of ability would give us the ability to give up the other square jobs that we have to focus on doing production and creativity and writing all of the time. And right now, this kind of gets squeezed into the rest of our natural lives, and that's a fine thing to do. We still entertain people, but I realize I want the opportunity to go out there and meet people like Taylor Negron, who's not on Entertainment Weekly, who's not in, you know, in the Insider, is not showing up every place, and yet is out in the world creating art, creating things to think about, making people laugh, naturally funny, interesting person, and that's just one. So, you know, in my mind, it's kind of one down 999,000 to go. And speaking of which, maybe it's time to knock one else off the list here right now. That was my smooth intro.
Very smooth.
We've already had a little technical glitch today. We're not going to talk about it, though.
Bourgeois house in the Hollywood Hills.
Fuck Parvis.
Dollar bills. Man came by to hook up my cable TV. We settled in for the night, my baby and me. We switched round and round till half past dawn. There was 57 channels in
the bald Jewish guy in the 1988 VW van.
57 channels in
the bald Jewish guy in the 1988 VW van.
57 channels in
the bald Jewish guy in the 1988 VW van.
57 channels in nothing on. 57 channels in nothing on.
Let us say Sona Vista to the bald Jewish guy in the 1988 VW van with a microphone in his hand who lays down on the streets in the ghetto. Jason Nathanson, Sona Vista, my friend.
Sona Vista, Robin.
How
happy
are you?
Happy anniversary. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
The schnauzers all grown up.
They are.
And you have been part of the show in one form or another from the very beginning.
Yeah, I was your original board op, wasn't I?
You were the original board op on KSCO. And
screening the wacky calls.
And you taught me, to be truth be told, Jason taught me a lot about sort of modern talk radio. Jason knew the art and the science of doing talk radio at that point. And it's always nicer to be, you know, surround yourself with people who are smarter than you are. And I think that's good advice. And Jason was there to kind of, and Jason was the audience of one. And so here I was in the studio doing something at that time that was so very different from everything else that was on KSCO, certainly on the weekends. And Sean and Chip were doing their show on the weekdays.
You weren't selling medical products. Basically.
Well, not very successfully, no. And so I would look at Jason, and one of the things I realized was Jason was not sort of looking at the computer on the side of his desk masturbating. He was actually listening to the show.
Well, I was just very stealthy about it.
And I figured that was a good sign, so thank you. But what I meant was, more specifically, you've been a part of this incarnation of Schnauzer Logic. You're the announcer for all of the liners that we did in the first go-round of Schnauzer Logic. So.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Thank you so very much. So big time, big deal. This time you actually made it to the red carpet of the Screen Actor Guild Awards.
Yeah, and it was a very interesting experience.
Talk about it, my friend.
I'd never been on a red carpet before, so I wasn't really sure exactly what to expect. And when I got out there, the reporter that I was working with hadn't shown up yet, so I was the one person on the red carpet.
Is that the gray-haired guy with the ponytail?
Yes, yeah. And I was kind of like holding our place on the red carpet, and people are kind of pushing around, jockeying for position, because especially for radio, you're assigned a place, but radio is it all the way at the end of the red carpet where the cameras can't see, nobody can see, and the stars have already done their TV time, and they're basically bored and want to get inside. And so they try to run right past you, and you got to kind of grab them and, you know, stick your arm out. So
that's going to prepare you for marriage, my friend.
So I was there trying to hold our place and, you know, talk to any of the kind of interesting people who were there at the beginning, except at the beginning of a show like this, the interesting people don't really show up. So you have, you know, the third lead from The Office or, you know, the guy who changes bedpans on Grey's Anatomy.
Well, I actually have Novak from The Office.
Yes.
And you sent that to me. We'll be able to play that today. Whenever you want, just let me know.
Cool. So that was one of the guys I got to talk to, BJ Novak. He is the writer and producer and one of the actors on The Office. He plays Ryan. He was a temp, and then they made him full time. And
he's involved with the sort of the romantic relationship with the Indian woman.
Yes,
and he clearly doesn't want to be part of it. And I've noticed in the beginning that he was, I guess, a consulting producer. What does that mean? He's a writer, effectively.
Yeah. I think he started out kind of as a writer, and he got to be more of a lead writer, and then he started writing full episodes, and in turn, they made him a producer as well.
Can we play this segment?
Yeah, sure.
I'll play it. It's only a minute long. Here's the thing that I think I want to play at the beginning. Initially, I was going to kind of make fun of it a little bit, but I'm not.
Well, that's
going
why I sent it to you.
I know. I was going to make fun of it. I'll be honest. I didn't. What I did instead was I cleaned it up a lot.
Good.
But I think even with the cleaning up, you can hear the pandemonium that's going on, and I think that's an interesting part of it, because when you're on television, you're watching E, for example, you don't have a sense of the pandemonium. So listen to this interview with Jason with BJ Novak, and you'll get a feeling for, and this is the beginning, right? So it's not like it's, you know, it's not packed solid at this point, right?
Right. The red carpet was open, I think, for a little over an hour, and this is about 15 minutes into it.
Okay, here we go. It's about a minute long.
Well, as a writer, I would love to tell you that it's 100% structured, 100% written in advance. As an actor, I'd like to tell you that we improvise summarize the whole thing. So the truth is, somewhere in the middle, it's very tightly structured and written compared to how it looks. I'd say a good 90% is written, but there's always a few takes where the actors invent their own thing, and that's often what makes it in the show.
Which do you prefer most, the writing or the acting or the producing?
I love the attention of being an actor when I'm walking down the red carpet and everyone's making me feel really cool. It's just such a thrill that you never get as a writer.
DJ, come back.
Better or worse, my real soul is
the guy
in the is eating too many pretzels in a writer's room. That's who I'll always be.
Is there a tendency to write yourself a bigger part?
No, there's a tendency to write myself a smaller part because I feel like such a jerk if I'm trying to write myself a huge part. And also, I like being on the set watching all the other actors and trying to direct and make it my way when it's the episode I wrote. So if I'm in it, then I don't know how it looks.
How the hell can you get anything?
Woo! Yay!
And that has been cleaned up tremendously. I mean, to try to EQ out as much of the background as possible, you almost can't hear what's going on. How do you think?
I mean, these people are coming by so fast, and you don't know exactly who they are. And it's not like you have prepared questions. You just know that every celebrity is going to be there. So, I mean, you have to kind of really think on your feet. And I'm not really an interviewer. This was my first time on there. And I didn't want to mess up and ask stupid questions. BJ was one of the guys that I actually knew and respected from the television world. So it was fun to talk to him, and it was kind of easy once the questions got going. But I mean, there's so many people around, and they're pushing you. All the other radio people are trying to push you out of the way and shoving their mics into people's faces. And it's just it's a really tough thing to do. A lot tougher than I thought.
All right, so now what was the question I just asked you? You sound like 1,000 times better now.
It's startling.
Yeah. Yeah, before it sounded like you were in a bowling alley.
Except you're going to hear a plane every now and then and get a plane joke out. So.
All right. So what's it like what's it like for the whole time? What's the rest of the experience like?
So you're on the red carpet and publicists are coming by, and if you catch them in the eye, they'll come over you and say, you know, do you want to talk with my client so-and-so? But half the time, their client is standing right there next to them, so you can't really say no, or, you know, you'll make them feel bad. So you end up talking to people that you really have no idea who they are. You have no questions prepared, so you just have to wing it. And that's how I ended up talking to, Kim Fisher.
I'm getting the plane joke ready.
There's one flying overhead. I talked to somebody from Deadwood. She's one of the character actors. She's actress.
Yeah.
But I didn't really know who she is. So the first question I ask her is, who are you excited to see here tonight? Which on its face is a normal question.
That's
a
pretty piss question.
But when you really think about it, you're saying, you're not really that famous. Who here is more famous than you that is interesting to see? So she, you know, is polite, and she says Brad Pitt, and I'm standing there, and you have to think of a question. I mean, because your time is limited, and you want to ask the greatest question. So she's on Deadwood, and so I ask her if she's ever been to Deadwood in South Dakota, because I'd been there, and I figured that's something we could at least talk about, and of course she says no. So I tell her, you know, congratulations, good luck tonight, and she moves on. Again, not knowing if she's actually up for anything, because I don't know who she is. But
you mean like a date?
Yes.
A three-way with you and Taylor Negron.
She was actually up for coffee later that night with you, but she didn't win. It was
right,
tragic.
Yeah. So, and then, you know, as time wears on, bigger and better stars come by, and eventually Will Smith came by, but he only could spend, you know, about 2 seconds with the media, and the director from Babel came by, and I had just seen that this weekend. A very good movie. Really enjoyed it. And so got a good long interview with him. I didn't, but the reporter for my station did.
Now, when you're done with the red carpet, is it the same thing? Do you sort of go into a little press room and basically watch it on a 17-inch Sylvania?
Yeah. This one was different than the Golden Globes. The Golden Globes, they stuck us in a little closet. This one, we actually got to be in the interview room where they bring the stars after they win.
Very cool.
So we're in the back of that room broadcasting from there. But for whatever reason, the SAG Awards, there's only 13 awards. It was a two-hour award show. I think for comparison, the Oscars have 25 awards. So they only ended up bringing about 5 or 6 people back. Two of them were Helen Mirren.
Great tits!
So, who came back? Eddie Murphy came back. He was kind of funny. Helen Mirren and Jeremy Irons were up there together.
Eddie Murphy has redeemed his career with this one fucking film, man. I mean, all of a sudden, the world is Eddie Murphy's oyster again.
But aren't you just waiting to see how he implodes his career over the next 8 or 10 months?
Norbit's coming.
Yeah, exactly. His next film is Norbit, where he plays 9 fat people.
Yeah.
I mean, who knows what his career is going to go from here. And then the last people that they brought back were the cast of Little Miss Sunshine. That was the big upset at the SAG Awards.
Yes.
Little Miss Sunshine won for Best Ensemble Cast, which is their version of Best Picture.
Yes.
And so the cast of the little girl, Abigail Breslin, Steve Carell, the Alan Arkin and
Greg Kinnear.
They all came back.
Yeah.
And Alan Arkin was
sounds like I was there and you were here, actually.
Alan Arkin was really salty to the press. He didn't want to answer any questions. And he just kind of stood there. He kind of looked like he didn't know where he was. He's getting old, I guess. And
it's all that heroin.
He's in Peter Boyle's world now.
Am I here for Catch 22? What?
So, and the thing about the little kids, I also got to interview a bunch of the kids from the show Weeds, which is a show we've talked about here.
We love the show.
A good show that I really, really like. But the thing is, when the kids come by, you expect that they're the kid from the show where they have lines written for them and they're kind of smart and funny.
Yeah.
When they come by, they're just 10-year-old kids.
Yeah.
So there's nothing to say to them, and especially a show about Weeds, you want to talk about the drug use and the sex with the deaf girl and, you know, things like that, and it doesn't seem appropriate when you're talking and, the parents are right behind them.
Doesn't it, Jason? Doesn't it seem appropriate?
So, Abigail Breslin at the end for Little Miss Sunshine, she gets up there and she was very cute. But, you know, you realize, again, she's a 10-year-old girl, 11-year-old girl. She doesn't really have a whole lot to say. And
I thought she was a 34-year-old midget, a little guy. She was
a little Buddhist.
A little Buddhist. That'll be funny when you listen to the show play back.
So it was, it was a lot of fun being on the red carpet.
And then tell us about the after party. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
It was a different experience, and you get to see these stars. You know, a lot of them have their egos stroked on a daily basis, and in this position
can
where
you drink can you drink any fucking louder? Can you get any closer?
It's just the ice. I'm sorry.
Can you get
any
closer to the microphone?
If I had a proper glass, it may not make noise.
It's celebratory.
That's right. Honestly, officer,
what are you guys drinking?
We were enjoying. What are you? Gin and tonics?
Gin and tonics.
Gin and tonics for the crew.
In a plastic red cup.
I didn't get one. Well, hey, I also didn't get my hamster dance song. I was looking forward to that. I hated it at the beginning. Now it's like crack. I have to hear it.
Well, tell you what. Tell you what we're going to do. We're going to take a break at this point before we let you go on to the next part of this thing. And when we come back, we'll do a little hamster dance song. How's that sound, all right?
That sounds great.
So we want to go to a break now?
Yeah, we're going to do a break.
Then it's time for me to go, hey, Jason!
How's your grandma?
Farvisa's not here today.
Where is he?
He fucked us in the ass.
Well, that doesn't mean he can't be there.
It almost demands that he be here.
Yeah, or it's awkward after something like that, isn't it?
Let's see, what should we play next? I think we'll play Walkie Talkie. We're playing all songs from the Apple iPod commercials today. It's a theme. Here's the deal. It's pretty good music. All right, so we'll play that, and we'll come back on the other side, all right? You can stick around, yes?
Yeah.
Jason Nathanson, Robin Goldstein, Sean Meehan, Sherry Stevens, and the liquor talking. We're here on Schnauzer Logic.
Just the ice rattling talking. I'd like to correct that.
The ice rattling talking. We'll be back on the other side, so I'm asking you to please stick around.
Boy.
Schnauzer Logic.
Yeah.
faster than me. Last night at the show, we saw him coming out of the street.
He's a walkie-talkie.
We all can talk it up, moving it, moving it, and hip it, and hopping it, taking it up. I was about to be a man. You better take a stand. You gotta wake up that thing in your hand. Looking all around, man, trying to be down, make sure when you're fighting, then you get a stand down. When I gotta go, bring me back up, bring me my ride back. Climb up, tag it.
Hey kids, are you looking for an exciting career in the world of broadcasting?
Uh-huh.
But afraid you don't have the skills or talent to make it?
Uh-uh.
Well, now you don't need either. At the Parviz Vitali School of Broadcasting, we'll show you that going on the air is just as easy as breathing air. Just listen to what our founder has to say.
Because I think
And if you act right now, you'll also learn sound effects. And impressions.
Andy!
So what are you waiting for? Join us today and your broadcasting career will be over tomorrow. The Parviz Vitali School of Broadcasting. Not associated with any real broadcasting school.
Welcome back. I have no idea how much time we are into the show. We've had little things at the clock today. Schnauzer Logic, Robin Goldstein, www.schnauzerlogic.com, robin@schnauzerlogic.com, myspace.com/schnauzerlogic, area code 206-666-6540. A little Parviz Vitali School of Broadcasting.
That was great.
Had you not heard that before?
I think I've heard it once before, but it's funnier today. I can't imagine why.
I figure we play a little bit of some of those timeless little bits because not everybody listens to the show. Started at show number one to get caught up. I mean, they kind of pick up the show wherever they are. So we did a lot more production in the beginning of the show. As I recall, I wasn't working very much for Apple back then.
Right.
I had a lot of free time. And I think my mom was okay. Mm-hmm. She was sort of living all right and doing okay. And so life has a way of kind of distracting you.
Yeah.
So we did that. We've got, I don't know if we'll get to it today, but we had the Brokeback Schnauzer.
Oh, yeah. Good.
Remember Brokeback Schnauzer?
I do. That was funny. And
that was funny.
It was heartbreaking. Huh? Really. It was heartbreaking.
You think?
It was so full of angst and...
It's only 40 seconds. We'll play it here.
Once in a generation... A film comes along that inspires hundreds of parodies. Then, when the joke is stale, Schnauzer Logic does its own. Brokeback Schnauzer. Starring Sean Meehan as Professor Albert Einstein.
We were hoping you would bring a dog.
Parviz Vitali as Sammy Sosa.
I think it's Chubby.
And introducing Robin Goldstein as the Dog Whisperer.
I wish I knew how to pet you.
Schnauzer Logic. The podcast, coming soon, and just a little too late.
Okay, go.
So People Magazine was having the after party, and they set up this big tent with plasma screen TVs and all this food and alcohol. And, of course, immediately after the show is over, everybody starts looking for free alcohol. So that's the mission.
Unlike this show, where people are looking for free alcohol before the show.
So I'm walking around, and I see people, you know, in tuxes headed in a certain area, and I kind of start to follow. And one of the people I was working with was a reporter for People Magazine, and I ask her, you know, where's the after party? And she says, I can't really tell you. So I say, okay, thanks, bitch, and I keep walking. I kind of just walk right into it. I mean, there's guards and stuff around, and they're looking at you, but if you just walk briskly and don't look them in the eye and you look like you know where you're going, nobody's really going to stop you because you're wearing a tux.
I was going to say, so you're wearing a tux.
Yeah.
Is this the same tux you wore for the first one?
Same style, different color tie.
Oh, okay.
I couldn't wear the same thing. That would, you know, wouldn't be good fashion.
Because there's a photo of you, you know, posted. This man... breaks into
Speaking
party.
Of photos, that photo that you got of Forrest Whitaker holding his Golden Globe, that's going to turn out to be a big deal. He's going to win the Oscar.
You know it.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think he's on track now to win the Oscar for Best Actor, and you have him there.
I got the only picture of him taken that night.
That's my point.
So I walk into this party, and I mean, it's really elaborate. They spent a lot of money on these things. And it's an open bar, every kind of alcohol you can imagine. So I immediately get a drink and start walking around looking for celebrities. And the first person I see is Michael Madsen. You know, kind of cool.
Wasn't he at the other party? Didn't you see him at the...
I didn't see him at the Golden Globes.
Did you see anybody at the Golden Globes who then recognized you from the Golden Globes?
I mean, only media press type people.
Okay.
Who we're in the same room with.
All right.
So, walking around and see Michael Madsen, great, you know, I don't really care, but good, cool Michael Madsen.
But you told him you loved his work.
Yeah, I'm like, your comedy is great. and then the only other person I saw was Lance Bass. The newly out gay member of NSYNC. But they had good food. They had really good food. And, the next day I go and I look at all the websites and stuff, and everybody and their mother was there like 2 hours before I was there. The whole cast of The Office.
So where were you during those 2 hours?
I was breaking down our setup and feeding some last-minute reports.
So basically what you're saying is your job sucks. You need to be a star.
Yeah.
All right. So, what's your plan?
My plan is to update the website about once every 2 weeks.
Well, if that's your plan, you're behind.
And see if anybody notices.
Jason.
Yes, Parviz.
I have exciting news. For everyone in the audience, this week, starting tomorrow, I am a Nielsen family.
Wow.
Yes. And so it is within my power to shoot the Weather Channel.
We have an appropriate sound for this. Hold on. Here we go. That is big news, my friend.
I do have a television.
Oh, you do have a television.
I do have a television. I just have
chosen...
So for
people, we don't know where this thing cut out. So what we should say is you said that you were... We'll start it again. We can do the whole thing here. Okay.
And this is very exciting. I am starting Thursday, I am a Nielsen family.
Wow.
I don't know where the sound effects are.
So...
Dun, 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 dun.
Thank you. There they are.
All right. Very good. Do I have the sound effects? Hold on a second here. Hold on. Okay.
Is that any indication of how I sing?
No. That was all provided to you courtesy of Tanqueray. But in any case, I am a Nielsen family, and I do... Now, there has been talk that I have no television. I do have a television.
I don't know if that's us or you.
Okay. Well,
Jason, isn't that you?
What?
He's in a battle zone now.
I'm broadcasting from the green zone, apparently.
We got to extract these men. But the deal is, I have a television, but I am honest enough to say that I am not hooked up to cable, which is, one of the things they ask. They want to know accessories you have. Do you have a TiVo or TiVo-like device? Do you have a VCR, DVD,
Do they laugh at you when you say you don't have cable?
No. I think they don't care because they want a true picture of who's listening. I do have a television, though, and I was wondering if there was anything that was on broadcast. Now, I can't go to cable because that's just too dishonest, but I will watch something on, one of the three networks or the CW or whatever they call it now.
Sure.
That is really full of merit. It's just meritorious stuff. What would you recommend? What needs a little pump?
I have the perfect show.
Do you?
Datelines to Catch a Predator.
I'm Chris Hansen.
Which came on last night and will come on again next week. That's absolutely one of my favorite shows because it's the only show that gets you feeling sorry for child predators. These four people walk in and then they spring cameras on them. And Chris Hansen must have the deal that Robin's got going on where if you say his name, he gets paid something because after every person he talks to, he goes, I'm Chris Hansen.
I'm Chris Hansen.
Catch a Predator with Dateline. Somebody's paying him. Or his friends were sitting around all stoned, and they're like, you know, hey, Chris Hansen, you know, it'd be really funny if you said your name after every time. And he goes, yeah, 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 I'll do that. I'm Chris Hansen.
So how long does this run for?
This runs for a week. It's Thursday to Thursday.
So it starts tomorrow.
It starts tomorrow.
Okay.
Do you get some kind of weird box or something?
Well,
or
no.
You write in a diary still.
You get a diary.
And a dollar.
And $5.
Oh,
they've upped it.
Wow.
Five crisp singles. I have never seen new singles.
Yeah.
But there they were.
Nielsen has a license from the government to print their own, actually. That's how television works.
Non-sequential.
A little known. That's right.
So in any case, though, so
for the next 5 days, you're going to be watching television 24/7, is what you're saying, as far as the diary is concerned. Do they want to know if you have a TiVo?
Yes, they want to know everything that's attached to your television. They want to know how many televisions you have in the house, what every one of them is attached to.
Wouldn't that be great if you had a TiVo but no cable?
but I'm going to be pretty honest.
All right. But if people listen to this and they want you to put something in, they can send email to robin@schnauzerlogic.com. They can go to the webpage at schnauzerlogic.com, or they can leave a voicemail at 206-666-6540. I will listen to that and send it along to Sean, and we can go pump up your favorite show on regular broadcast TV.
There you go.
I'm a big
fan. I will watch it, too. It's not going to be something where I'm going to be
dishonest. But you can't get all the channels.
I think I can get... I can't get ABC.
Okay.
I don't think that there is an I haven't tried in a while, but I don't think that there is an ABC affiliate in my broadcast area. But I can get NBC, CBS, I can get Fox, I can get one of those CW, you know, one of the things that the WB changed into.
Okay.
So I can get a lot, and I can get PBS.
I hear American Idol really needs a ratings boost.
Yeah, those guys are hurting.
Yeah.
So what's the next thing on the award schedule for you, my friend?
Grammys, February 11th. Not this Sunday, but a week from Sunday.
That's right, because this Sunday is the Super Bowl.
Yes.
You got a pick for us?
Very exciting. The Dolphins?
All the way, baby. All the way.
Okay.
No, I was kind of rooting for the Saints. They got knocked out, so I don't,
you don't care now?
I don't really care.
All right. He's in a don't care kind of column. All right.
I was a Bears fan because of the Super Bowl shuffle back in the 80s.
The Bears.
So
a funky QB whose name's McMahon.
I'll go Bears, yeah. And I think they're getting 7 points, which is a good spread. So.
So the next thing is the Grammys.
Yeah, the Grammys, which are February 11th, and that's at the Staples Center down here in Los Angeles.
Okay.
And very exciting. The Police just was announced that they're going to be opening the show.
Yes, they've been up in Canada rehearsing.
Yeah, so they'll be funny, apparently, because everything from Canada is funny. And then after that, it's the Oscars.
And did you look into the Independent Spirit Awards?
No, I haven't yet.
How about the Razzies?
Yes, we're going to go to the Razzies.
Outstanding!
That's the day before the Oscars.
Right.
And it's at a little club, Ibar, where I saw Christina Aguilera last time I was there.
So okay.
I'm very excited.
You know, sometimes the stars actually show up. I believe that for when Catwoman got Razzies.
Halle Berry
actually showed. Sometimes the stars really show.
Yes.
I think Sharon Stone, I heard a rumor, Sharon Stone is supposed to show up.
All right. Very exciting stuff.
So we'll see.
All right. What else is going on in the world of Jason Nathanson that we should know about? We got about a minute left here.
Well, that's just not enough time.
We got 2 minutes. What's happening down in San Diego? Did you pass on the gig?
Yeah, I officially have passed on that.
We're all so sad about that.
Yeah, I know. Really were looking forward to more death video segments.
And do we have to wait another week for the game show update?
Yeah, it's not going to be on this week. They're doing some special version with kids this week, which you couldn't get more annoying. And so next week. But I did see in the commercials, they're showing commercials for my show, and you can see my little bald head wiggling around.
No.
All right.
Is that right?
Yeah. They actually do this really weird thing where they do a time lapse, really fast photography. And so my head, it looks like I'm having a seizure.
I'll be the judge of that. So, oh, wow. Okay, so this is now playing on NBC, because I can just start TiVoing NBC and looking do a screen cap for you.
Yeah. And I'm TiVoing it as well. And if you want to see SAG Award pictures and stuff, that's all at randomshow.blogspot.com.
All right. And what about you and Sam going back into the studio to do your own thing?
Once the Super Bowl's over.
Oh, right. That's right, because you need to, because you guys didn't remember that maybe you were still doing sports.
Right. that little son of a bitch, he's in Atlantis right now, the Bahamas resort.
Yeah.
They sent his whole, all of Fox Sports Radio people, they sent him there for a week for the Super Bowl.
Well, Super Bowl's not on Fox this year, right?
No, but he's on Fox Sports Radio, so they're covering it.
Oh.
But they're covering it from the Bahamas when it's in Miami. Doesn't make sense to me, but, you know, a free trip for a week to Atlantis, sure.
I thought you meant the undersea world that was ruled by Neptune.
Which would have been so much better.
I was so confused about the whole thing. Okay, that's the best I can do.
Okay, so we probably have 30 seconds left, so somebody has to ask about my grandma at this point.
Let
Sherry ask for Jason.
Jason, how's your grandma?
There's a protocol. There's a protocol.
Jason. Let me see how obnoxious I can get. How's your grandma?
She's doing very well.
Oh, good.
She had a little fall last week.
Oh. Uh-oh.
But she's doing okay.
Nothing broken.
And how is Trudel?
Trudel's doing good.
Are you driving Trudel?
No, my dad drives Trudel every day.
Okay.
I've been thinking about going on a trip. I just need to find a little time off here.
Didn't you just come back from a trip?
Well, the call of the open road, it's very, you know, very strong.
Well, you need to coordinate with Oprah this time. Have our people call your people. That would be you.
That would be me.
I think Ken Turetsky would be your people.
Really?
We can have our people call. Yeah, I think he would do that.
I need people.
Well, you know what they say about people who need people.
They're the luckiest people in the world.
Thank you very much. American Idol. Be there. All right, we got more stuff to talk about next week, but today's our anniversary show. We're running long, and so we figure we'll just we'll move on to the next segment.
And happy anniversary.
Thank you, my friend. Thank you so much for being a part of it.
Nobody thought it would last.
Wait, what do you mean nobody thought it would last?
I've talked to everybody, and they all said it wouldn't last.
Well,
we proved them wrong.
It's certainly unusual for a podcast to be around for a year. Most of them don't get to 10 episodes. But this is not a podcast. This is a radio show. We are like the man without a country.
Good. And, you know, I'm glad you said that, because I don't like the word podcast.
No. I don't use it. You may notice I don't use it anymore.
Yeah.
Sherry's brought it up 4 or 5 times, but I don't mention it. This is a show.
Yes.
It's a show. We're doing a show. It's a big show.
It's a big show.
That's right. Now, KSCO, I consider a podcast.
What's up with that? Are you going to be going on there?
I don't. Did you hear that they turned KOMY into an oldie station?
I did not.
Yes, he's turned KOMY into an oldie station. You want to know something? It actually is not a bad idea.
I thought you were going to say Spanish. So
Spanish oldies.
Spanish oldies.
Spanish oldies station. Guantanamera. No, and I think
wasn't it already an oldies station? When you really think about it.
Oh, nicely done.
I guess this one's not going on there.
I have not heard back from Michael at this point. I don't know what's going on there.
It takes a while to do all the contracts.
Here's the reality. The reality is this is a great show that I think would do well on KSCO, but it's not, doesn't fit into their format of
crappy shows.
Of
what's their format?
Of angry, ignorant people yelling at each other. And that's okay. I think we would do well on the weekend. What I really would like is for this to be a show on the weekends.
By the way, you did a great job diffusing the ignorance when you were on. I was really impressed with how you handled the ignorant callers. So,
well, that's very nice.
If people haven't listened, you know, go listen to
It's a lot to ask somebody to listen to that whole segment. It's an awful lot.
It's painful.
It was hard for me to go. No, I mean, listen, it is what it is. And that's fine. I've been talking with some folks in the station. I remember when they used to do live and local programming all weekend long and not infomercials, and people would tune in and listen. I think that if we could do the show on the weekends, we would do it. I would be willing to say that we'd do it live once a month. So once a month, we'd go over the hill and we would take callers and whatever, and the rest of the time, we'd do it out of the studio here. We'd be able to keep it live, keep it local, keep it entertaining, and it would be a lighter kind of show. So I hope Michael's still interested. I'd love to move the show over there, but, you know, it's not going to fit in a weekday slot. This is not News Talk.
That's, well, yeah.
All right. Well, listen, on that happy note, we'll take a break. Listen, thanks.
And you can listen to me every Thursday on there, speaking of which.
Tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
You taped it with Rosemary today, yeah?
I already taped it, yeah.
Outstanding. All right, good. You mentioned my name?
I did, actually. At the top, I got out a plug for you.
Oh, God bless you. Check is in the mail.
She starts every segment with our friend, our buddy, or our pal, Jason.
Which is my line.
Yeah, I know. And she usually credits you.
All right. We'll take a break. We'll be back on the other side. Take care, my friend.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye. All right, we'll take a break back on the other side. Schnauzer Logic, stick around.
That's the trouble around here. Talk, talk, talk. Oh, sometimes I think I must go mad.
We'll be back with more Schnauzer Logic.
Because you look so fine that I really want to make you mine. I say you look so fine that I really want to make you mine. 4, 5, 6, come on and get your kicks. Now you don't need the money when you look like that, do you, honey? Big black boots, long brown hair. She's so sweet with her. Said, are you gonna be my girl? It's 1, 2, 3, take my hand and come with me. Because you look so fine that I really wanna make you mine. I said you look so fine that I really wanna make you mine. 4, 5, 6, come on and get your kicks. Now you don't need money with a face like that, do ya? Big black boots, long brown hair. She's so sweet with her. I said, are you gonna be my girl?
Anything you do not understand? Is there anything you understand only partially? If you have not been fully oriented, you must file a complaint with personnel. File a faulty complaint, and they dock you.
Welcome back. We're some number of minutes into our 1-year anniversary episode, Schnauzer Logic. being recorded on Wednesday. It's the 31st of January, 2007. Let's welcome back and say Zona Vista to Sherry Stevens.
Zona Vista.
And Sean Meehan.
Zona Vista.
I'm a little worried about Parviz, actually.
Are you?
Yeah, because he said that he was actually going to work overtime today, and then he was going to be here, and it's not like him to... Oh, there was a message that he left us at 6:41, so maybe that's what's going on.
I won't be there for the last 16 minutes of the show.
Should we listen to what the message has to say?
Absolutely.
All right, hold on a second. You guys keep talking. I'll get this on the line.
People are concerned. We still are, I'm sure, going to talk about the Super Bowl when we get back, and I'm sorry that...
You can keep talking.
I'm sorry that Parviz is not here to partake in that, because as everyone knows, Parviz, of course, is not a residential plumber. He's a commercial plumber. But he's a blue-collar man, and as a blue-collar man, he is powerfully influenced by sports spectacle, because that's what happens when you work with your hands.
Okay.
He likes Schlitz?
I don't know. I give him up.
Okay. He likes Schlitz or other malt liquor.
No voicemail?
Yeah, it's just I don't know.
It exploded.
I don't know how to do it. Just fuck it.
All right.
I don't care.
But I wanted to hear Parviz's call, and this is kind of an important Super Bowl.
Well, you keep
What I mean is I wanted to hear Parviz's call on the Super Bowl.
All right, well, I can do it this way. Hold on a second here.
Okay.
You have 3 saved messages. First voice message.
Hi, Robin. Just called to wish you a happy anniversary. And I was hoping to be on the air, but I'm just getting out of work right now. So, anyways, I guess I'll talk to you later. Bye.
End of message.
He sounded sad. That's too bad.
Yeah.
He sounded sad. But he was on the air.
Yes, now he was.
Now, yeah, so.
We figured that out.
But he doesn't know, so this will be exciting.
Yes.
We
Super Bowl. Super Bowl. Super Bowl.
Super Bowl. Super Bowl. Super Bowl.
Talk to me.
It's a big important event because as many of you who maybe don't follow sports know that the NFL's affirmative action program is finally paid off, and we have two head coaches of color have finally.
As well as apparent as opposed to the transparent coaches yeah. we've had all these years.
We have had many years of transparent coaching. but it's kind of an amazing thing, because football at the highest levels has been a very segregated kind of sport. It's not like baseball, which seemed to have a plethora of, black managers.
Right.
And, Latino managers, things like that. There were quite a number, but football has remained largely segregated at the highest levels. Of course, there have been black players, since the 60s, really.
Sure.
But there have not been, black quarterbacks have been rare up until, say, a decade ago.
Mm-hmm.
There was a real feeling that, blacks were somehow incapable of the challenging task of quarterbacking.
Are there any black owners?
That is an interesting question.
Because when people talk about it, when they talk about the difference between being like wealthy and being rich, like, there's some comedian talks about it, and it's like, rich is you got money for rims, but wealthy is you own the team. That's wealthy, right? That's sort of the beginning of a dynasty. Not just money for now, but money for generations to come.
I think that's an interesting question. It's hard to know now because there are teams who don't have sole ownership. There isn't,
right.
American sports organizations, I have to laugh. I heard something quite a number of months ago on the BBC where a bunch of BBC sports commentators were talking about the guy who owns the, what's the big soccer team over there? The Celtic United.
Neither of us are helping you. We're staring,
Sean,
like monkeys.
Well, in any case,
we want to go back to our great.
The guy who owns
Manchester United.
Manchester United. Thank you.
Oh, that I knew.
Yeah. Well, in any case, the guy who owns Manchester United now owns a football franchise. He owns the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Okay.
And a lot of these guys were saying, you know, it's really absurd. He comes over, you know, this is a world-class sporting organization. We're talking about an organization worth, £100 million. And he has some little football franchise in America. He doesn't understand how to run a big organization. And I thought, oh, come on. You know, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are actually worth about three times as much.
I was going to guess, in the billions of dollars, right, for a franchise of that nature.
And so I kind of laughed. But this is big deal, big time stuff.
Did the guy saying that have bad teeth, by the way?
Of course.
Okay.
Of course. You know, they floss. They don't understand how to run a football organization. But in any case, these organizations are so expensive that in a lot of cases, they're groups, they're ownership groups that have them. And sometimes those run into the dozens of people.
Sure.
So I don't know. But football has remained, I think, more segregated. So this is a good thing. To have two people come up there, I think they're literally only a couple, maybe three black coaches in the whole NFL, and to have them both in the Super Bowl is kind of extraordinary.
So, Super Bowl on Sunday, you have plans to watch it?
No.
You have plans to watch it?
I do.
You do? Where are you going to be? Home. Big party?
No.
We got your new big time, big deal television.
I do.
Your big 46-inch Sony Bravia flat screen LCD panel set in high definition.
Yes.
Very cool. The game's
what
better
are you
that
doing?
Way. Probably the same. Probably watching it in my new Lazy Boy
That's
recliner.
That's right.
That's right.
Lazy for
From
one and a half.
Dicker and Dicker of Beverly Hills. And I did. No plans to watch it?
Well, if it's available on broadcast and it will come in on my 1988 26-inch Zenith.
Well, of course, you're welcome here. Or Sherry's place. Mm-hmm. You're welcome to come over with either place. Bring Michelle and your favorite beverage and come over and hang out on the couch.
Now I'm happy. Thank
you. There you go.
I'm happy.
So that's what we'll do. I have to I have to set up a bet with my nephew for this thing, as I do every year. Teach him a little bit more about math. Mostly about losing. Who should I take?
Colts.
I'm Colts are my sentimental favorite.
Oh yeah, Indiana.
Yeah.
Indianapolis.
Yeah, I think that Dungy's been right on the precipice of this for a long time, and I like their QB. So,
Barry Bonds signed with the Giants.
I didn't hear that.
Yeah, but they can nix him if he gets indicted.
Is that true?
Yeah, they wrote a special clause into the contract where if he's indicted on steroids, for you people out of the country, you got a steroids problem in baseball. Barry Bonds is at the epicenter, and if the if the government decides to
indict him,
the Giants get to just come away clean.
Indictment is does he have to be convicted or just an indictment?
Just an indictment.
Wow.
So some DA or some federal attorney or whatever could really screw with Barry Bonds.
I'm guessing somebody in Los Angeles. That's how I think. That's how I roll with my hoopties. Yeah, you know, it's funny. I'm a little sorry that they signed him.
Really?
I was hoping. Yeah, I was. At this point, there's been so much brouhaha. We've got Barry Zito. We've got a new pitcher, right? Supposed to be an ace. I would like to see all of the falder all around Bonds to just go away, because this means the traveling circus stays in town for another year. I would have been very happy to see that circus be gone. This year, we have the All-Star game is here in San Francisco.
That's true.
So it's very exciting. We've got stuff going on. We could actually reinvigorate baseball in San Francisco.
Maybe he'll just knock the crap out of it. Just knock the cover off the ball early in the season, break the record.
And then sit on my recliner.
And then sit on your recliner.
Nice.
All right. Well, that seems like a show. What about you? What's coming up? So you've been talking for the last few weeks about how your stuff, your day job, has been putting
my
you through the ringer.
Yeah, it has. And now
are you done with the ringer?
Now I'm into a far more workable but very busy ringer. I'm into real work now, so that's good. So
okay.
I'm already feeling behind, but it's good stuff. You know, we're moving forward. I was just doing a lot of things to prepare for a decision that should have been made weeks ago.
Yeah.
So I wasn't doing what I would consider real work. Now I'm doing real work.
Product work.
Yeah, product work.
Good.
Yeah.
Exciting things on the horizon? I know you can't
always
talk about it. Yeah?
Always.
Very exciting?
It's always exciting.
All right.
Yep.
We just released all the little shuffles in multiple
little
colors?
Little shuffles and colors. Yeah.
And Bill Gates released Vista and went on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart.
Oh, I didn't see.
Yeah. I wonder if this means that Steve will show up on The Daily Show. I don't
He's
think
never
so.
Done any late night television,
no,
has he?
No. But Gates showed up on The Daily Show and then left before the interview was over.
Seriously.
He wasn't angry. He just kind of got up as Stewart was kind of doing, all right, Windows Vista, and Gates was up and walking towards
and him. Out.
Yeah, and Jon Stewart shouted at him, hey, we're not done. And so I think he's just so unaccustomed. He's, you know, years ago, when I first moved out here to the Silicon Valley, I was getting into those circles, and somebody invited me to a fundraiser for the Computer Museum, and so I thought this would be a way to meet clients and what have you, so I went. And there were maybe 100 of us there, and Bill Gates was there. This was a big deal, and Bill Gates was there, and I was going over to introduce myself to him. This is right before he got married to Melissa. And as I walked over to him, because it was a very intimate kind of event, he spilled an entire plate of food on himself. It just kind of spilled backwards, and I thought, yeah, I don't think so.
Oops,
and
didn't
that
see
was
that.
It.
Never mind.
And I turned around and walked away. So I could have been Balmer. All right, well, listen, that marks the end of year number one. Next week is the beginning of year number two. I think Rich Tallarico is going to be our guest. We've got other guests coming down. I think if we can get Parviz to guarantee to show up, John DeCoven wants to come into the studio to play a live round of Win John DeCoven's Money.
That's great.
So that'll be great. More guests, more you. Yes?
I'm sure hoping.
More you.
Sure.
More that fuck Parviz. And, of course, more of you out there in the audience. We love you so much for listening to the show. It makes it all worthwhile for us. So until next week, I love you, Mom. I love you, Dad. I miss you both. Show up, pay attention, tell the truth, and don't be attached to the outcome. www.schnauzerlogic.com, robin.schnauzerlogic.com, and 206-666-6540. Leave a question for Parviz. He loves you, too.
And Nielsen.
Take care. Bye-bye.
This is over now, and you just got to deal with it.
I want you to know it's over.
It's over, Johnny. It's over!
It's over, Harvey. I'm sorry. I need to get on with my life.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Elvis has left the building.
I'm in my vagina.